This is Cicely Tyson. Listen for a moment to a familiar urban sound. Yes, the L train, as it is called in Chicago, the subway in New York. A means of public transportation, and beyond that, many other things. A place where people meet and sometimes fall in love.
Her face drew him to her the first time. And after a few trips, the delicate rhythm of her slender shoulders swaying with the movement of the train.
47th Street, next stop, 51st.
Watch your step as you depart the train.
It was always on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Usually she read a book, heavyish, philosophical things. He noticed her quiet brown eyes full of soft shadows. But at other times, she simply stared out at the passing scene, a coffee and ebony-shaded Madonna.
51st Street, 51st. Transfer point for East and Western Line.
Thursday again. Between stations, he studied her face, feeling fortunate that it wasn't one of those times that she had a seat facing away from him. He casually dug down into the side pocket of his motorman's uniform for his pad and pencil, glanced up through the L car carefully to make certain that there were no passengers checking him out in his glass metal cage or daytime inspectors doing efficiency reports on his run. It would never do for either one or the other to think that the motorman of their train was allowing the monster free rein. All of the passengers, including his special passenger, seemed to be absorbed by some secret, private activity that allowed them to take him for granted. Fred smiled.
A damn train probably could run on its own.
And checked off a couple of landmarks as they slid past.
2 minutes to the next station.
And scribbled, his pencil swaying on the small pad with the train's motions.
Thursday again. Today the color is mint and makes all the fall leaves and colors seem like a tapestry with a cocoa brown shawl. Wish I knew what was behind her face. What gives her such a strange...
He glanced down at the south side streets.
Such a strange expression. 30 seconds more.
His pencil danced in the air above the memo pad for a few strokes, searching for more words to describe her and the feeling she pulled down on him.
Ah!
He almost growled, disgusted with himself and the lack of time he had to really say what he wanted to say, if it were possible. He flipped the pages of the pad.
I have to get another pad pretty soon.
And impulsively scribbled...
I love you.
...across his latest sentences and pushed the pad and pencil back down into his pocket. What else was there to say? He stared at her, smiling inside himself at the absurdity of the situation.
Before going into our story, I would like to pose a question. How familiar are familiar strangers?
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, Very Affectionately Yours, Fred, by Odie Hawkins. Our stars, Kim Hamilton, Robert O'Kee, and Robin Braxton.
Being in love has to be considered one of the most graceful states that one could ever find oneself in. However, it isn't always easy to make others understand that state of being, especially friends.
What would his buddies down at the bar and grill say if he ever talked to them about this? About her?
They'd probably laugh themselves silly. Another fool with his nose open.
Oh, whoa, just a minute, Fred. Now make me really understand this. Are you actually standing here with 2 rounds of my hard-earned money in your belly, trying to convince me that you've fallen in love with some woman's face?
Yeah, Fred, tell us everything we need to know about this situation. I want to hear about it from beginning to end. Who knows? It might make me a believer in something.
Nope. No understanding from J.J. or Nick either.
He lowered the window of his compartment, adjusted the black silk scarf around his neck, and divided his attention between the upcoming station stop and the mysterious passenger he had fallen in love with. In a lot of ways, he felt, it did seem silly to be going through so many changes about a total stranger.
51st Street, 51st.
He announced, his voice blending with the noise of the train pulling out on the other side of the tracks, and decided not to give the rest of the little spiel he usually gave. A couple of old-timers habituated to his station-by-station patter gave him curious, unfulfilled stares as they passed his compartment.
39th Street, that great street, that hip meet-your-date street, that devil-may-care watch-your-plate street, and don't forget to stamp your transfers if you intend to bus east or west.
There was so much peace in her face. Serenity, thinking about it in a deeper sense. But at the same time, the hint of some kind of pain.
Maybe she's crazy. Or maybe I am.
The neutral glance of a pair of almond-shaped eyes suddenly flashed him back into the rice paddies of Vietnam. The woman sitting, squatting in front of her burned-out home, a dead baby in her arms, half of her face blown away, violated beyond tears or screams. War!
No, she isn't that. She isn't Vietnam. The horror story. No love, hate, pity, none. This is the face of the woman I love.
On at least three occasions, they had exchanged looks. From her, it had been nothing more than the sympathetic glance anyone would offer a man on his job. He hoped that she had read something of his feelings in the way he had poured his emotional state out through his stare. But she didn't seem to have noticed anything extraordinary. He stared down onto the streets of the South Side as they slipped by, remembering 47th Street, 51st Street, 55th Street. Streets once filled with sidewalk vendors, championship fighters, ladies of high and low repute, artistic people. A sudden change of thought jarred him.
What if she's married and has five kids?
That ugly recurring thought caused several frowns to appear on his smooth brown forehead.
Nah, she couldn't have five kids. She couldn't be older than 25. 28 at the most. Nah, she isn't married. Couldn't be.
An ordinary stop. But like the others, one that forced him to pay close attention to details, like making certain that no one got caught in the folding doors. And once again, she was gone. Since that first Tuesday in late August, it had been that way. She would be there and then gone until the following Thursday, leaving him with a numb, anxious feeling.
Will I ever see her again?
And she would reappear. He had reached the point of being able to recognize the back of her head, almost.
August 28th. The first time ever I saw your face. September. And now, the last week in October. I just have to say something to her next week. Something.
63rd and Stony. End of the line. Lunch and then back the other way.
Hey, Fred! McManus wants to see you.
What for?
Oh, who knows? Maybe you missed a couple of stations or something.
I wonder what McManus wants. Just like that turkey to want to see me on my lunch hour.
Come on in.
Genial Irishman, McManus, almost leprechaun-looking, a ragged cigar clenched in the corner of his mouth, as much a part of his face as the broken veins in his middleweight boxer's nose.
You wanted to see me?
McManus shuffled through a pile of papers on his cluttered desk, frowning.
I got a wee bit of bad news for you, Vernon. I hope it doesn't break your heart or nothing.
Well, spit it out. What is it?
Well, we got to change a shift.
You got to do what?
Very affectionately yours, Fred, continues.
What is this, McManus? I mean, some kind of joke? I mean, what do you mean you have to change my shift?
McManus shuttled the ragged cigar stub from one side of his mouth to the other side. He hated to be the one to notify motormen of shift changes.
Now, take it easy, Vernon. Take it easy. Now, why it is, it's because Norton's wife has just had twins, as you know, and, he wants to be home evenings with her. We try to be sympathetic about things like this, and, well, besides, he has seniority.
Fred felt weak.
Changing my shift. That'll mean I won't...
Like I said, Vernon, Norton's wife.
Oh, okay, it's okay, I understand. When do I go on nights?
McManus shuffled through a pile of papers at one side of his desk and reclenched his cigar.
Well, let me see. Monday.
Fred smiled at McManus, despite his low feelings. McManus couldn't tell you what day it was until he had shuffled a few papers around. A born bureaucrat.
Well, I guess that's that. Monday it is.
Ah, thanks, Vernon. Mighty decent of you to take it so smoothly.
See you Monday, McManus.
Fred strolled back up onto the station platform, lunch forgotten.
Let me see. Work tomorrow, off Saturday and Sunday, change shift on Monday.
Change on Monday, just like that. The fire flickered out before it could be lit.
The Friday run was like a reluctant thought. Once started, he fumbled through it as though it were a bad dream, at times thinking about the Monday shift change. He wandered off into deep depressions.
Wonder if I'll ever see her again.
The weekend slipped past as a series of disconnected events, and finally it was Monday and the Monday night run. Saturday. He spooled his thoughts backwards for the first 2 hours of his run, back to the disconnected events of Saturday dinner with an old girlfriend, a date to be kept no matter what he had promised.
What's the matter, Fred? You used to love my Creole gumbo.
Oh, I still do, Shirley. I still do.
You don't act like it.
Sorry, Shirley. Guess I just got a lot on my mind.
Is that why you didn't call me last week?
Oh, did I say I was going to call you?
Don't you remember? I called to you just as you were pulling out of the station, and you said you'd call me. Don't you remember?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
But you didn't call.
No, I guess I didn't. Must have forgotten.
Is she pretty?
Huh?
Oh, come on now, Fred Vernon. You can trust me. I'm trusty old Shirley, remember?
I don't see any reason why you have to refer to yourself as trusty old Shirley.
Okay, skip that part. All I'm trying to say is that you can talk to me.
About anything?
About anything. Don't you remember when we broke up? After we broke up, we made an agreement that we would keep the lines of communication open.
I've always loved you for that, Shirley.
Well, thank goodness I didn't miss the mark altogether.
Oh, come on, Shirley.
Well, just funning. Go on. Maybe what you need is a sympathetic ear. It helps at times. You know what I mean?
Sunday. Jogging in the park at 9:30. The Hyde Park Jazz Festival at 3:30 with Nick.
Fred, check those two foxes out.
I see them.
Hey, man, you don't see ladies like those two. You experience them.
All right, so you experience them. So what?
Wow, and I thought I was jaded.
He stretched himself out on his extra-wide bed and thought about the work shift change. He faded off into an uneven sleep, worn out by a full evening's work and a half-dozen clashing ambiguities.
39th Street, that great street. Next is 43rd Street, where you can transfer to State Street. Watch your step, please. 47th, nowhere close to heaven. Watch your step, please. 51st, definitely not the worst. You may want Muhammad Ali, but all you got is me. Watch your step, please. 58th Street, players beware. This is the turf of Jackie the Bear. Watch your step, please, watch your step. 61st, not the worst, but not the first. Watch your step, please, watch your step.
Tuesday morning gave him the odd sensation of being in the center of a dust bowl of mixed-up feelings.
What's the deal with you, Fred? You one of these guys who has to be on a job night and day? You know, if I'd worked till midnight last night, I'd still be copping some Z's.
Fred gave J.J. a tight little smile and waved to him as he began his run, ignoring his comments. He checked his watch again.
What if my timing's off?
He looked over the railing of the station platform at 39th Street, stretching away to State Street and back to his watch.
Great. Right on the button.
Norton frowned behind the thick glass of his compartment, the one that had formerly belonged to Fred, the guy casting the sickly smile in his direction. He slid the motorman's compartment window down as the train ground to a stop.
What's he hanging around for? Maybe he's salting about being bumped. I hope McManus told him about my wife. What's the matter, Fred? Riding my train today, huh?
Oh, yeah. It looks. Luck, I guess.
He spotted her the moment he stepped into the train. A cool, cocoa brown vision in navy blue, sitting next to the window. A little Pekingese grandmother type perched on the seat beside her. Her mother? No, obviously just another passenger. He suddenly felt a twinge of hostility toward the woman sitting next to her, and toward Norton occupying his former vantage point. He leaned against one of the metal support poles, pushing his evil thoughts aside, exhausted from a feverish morning of rehearsing, scribbling final notes in his memo pads, and worrying about whether she would think he was some kind of nut when he approached her. And now, of all things, a little old lady. The large, slow-moving woman glared at him as he outmaneuvered her for the seat that the little old lady unexpectedly vacated, preparing to get off at the next stop. She turned to glance at the man who had just plopped into the seat beside her. A neutral look. Fred lowered his eyes, embarrassed about depriving a woman of a seat.
She's even prettier close up.
43rd Street. 43rd Street. Transfer point for East and West Surface Lines. Watch your step, please.
Every emotional path has its special pitfalls, and none has more than the one Fred is on.
He studied her profile out of the corner of his eyes.
Lovely. Simply lovely.
He felt perspiration trickle down from both armpits. How would she take it? Would she be angry? What?
47th Street. 47th Street. Watch your step, ladies and gentlemen, as you depart the coach. 47th Street.
Norton was doing a good job. Fred swallowed hard, the tension making his mouth dry.
Excuse me. Would you read these, please?
The voice wasn't his. He was sure of that. But the trembling hand offering the two thick memo pads to the woman sitting next to him was his.
I beg your pardon.
I said, excuse me. Would you please read these? Please?
She studied his face for a few hard moments, making him feel like a pornographic postcard pusher before she slowly reached for the pads.
What are these?
Please, I can't explain. Just read. I'll explain.
He felt as though he had turned to stone. He couldn't move a muscle and his palms were clammy.
What will she think? You're a total stranger giving her two pads to read. Hope she doesn't think I'm one of the freakos.
He doesn't look like a weirdie. Kind of nice looking guy. Bold chin, lot of humor in his face. Nervous, imaginative type. Bet he's a Cancerian. Wonder what this is.
He watched her, his breath coming in and out quickly. She hesitantly opened the cover of the first pad.
Tuesday, August 28th. The first time ever I saw your face. My first impulse was to step out of my booth and introduce myself. To tell you that I had just seen you and that I was in love with you. But I crossed the idea out. Realizing how weird with the rest of the weirdies it would come off for the motorman of the train to leave his booth and do something like that. I decided to do something very sane instead. I bought this pad to record my feelings on, to have a way of showing you someday how I felt about you from the very beginning.
As she slowly read the pages, the sound of the train and other outside noises seemed to fade away.
Thursday, August 30th. Since Tuesday, I felt as though the world has given me a warm embrace and then opened its arms and dropped me out in space. Float around, lost. I was saved today when she reappeared. I almost want to laugh at myself, but I can't. The situation is too serious. I can't imagine anything funnier in a way than being in love with someone who doesn't even know I exist. She may be married and have children, or engaged, or deeply involved with someone. I know she isn't. She just couldn't be. Well, all my fingers are crossed anyway. Beautiful sister. Not just beautiful pretty, but really beautiful in a way that you can feel better than you can see. Reads thickish books and has a semi-dreamy, faraway expression on her face. Wonder what her name is.
My name is Althea Cole.
A giant frog croaked its way out of Fred's throat as he awkwardly pushed his hand out to shake hers.
I'm Fred. Fred Vernon.
Pleased to meet you.
She flicked a dimple-loaded smile in his direction and continued reading.
September 4th, Tuesday again. Haven't seen her since last Thursday, and I've missed her a whole bunch. More than that, even. A fawn-colored scarf is afro wrapped around her head and seems to make her eyes gleam. Or is that my imagination? I find myself wondering if this woman is a kind of fantasy figure for me. I mean, what am I in love with? Love?
September 6th, Thursday. As usual, you made an entrance while my attention was dealing with something else. The sight of you with the mint green shawl draped around your body like an Indian sari took my breath away. Autumn is here now, full of blazing reds, oranges, and brownish yellows and mint green. I want to hold your face in the palms of my hands and simply look into your eyes and study the line of your nose, the lazy curl of your mouth. Tell you that I love you. I don't know who you are or where you came from, but I know that you still will be taking some part of me with you wherever you go, whether you know it or not.
She paused in her reading and studied Fred's nervous profile for a long, warm moment.
Anxiety has given me a pretty rough time since last Thursday. Today, Tuesday, September 11th. For some weird reason, I got it in my head that I would never see you again.
Well, in many ways, it seemed like a logical conclusion to reach. I mean, let's face it. I had never seen you before I saw you the first time, so why should I get all pepped up by the idea? Ah, skip that.
Today is Tuesday, and I'm so happy to see you, I don't know what to do. I'm very puzzled about your schedule. Why don't I see you on any other days other than Tuesday and Thursdays?
Fred was puzzled, pleased, and surprised to see the barest hint of a sad smile drift across her face.
Tuesday, September 18th. It's Tuesday again. I'm beginning to feel like some kind of detective. Here are my clues.
You board the train somewhere on the west side. I don't know where because I just seem to look up and there you are. Always Tuesday and Thursday. And maybe some other days too, but I don't see you on those days.
You wear beautiful clothes and gorgeous shades of lavender, green, deep purple, and a couple of other shades that I haven't been able to figure out. It's obvious that you use your library card a lot. I've seen you with 4 or 5 books that I've been threatening to read since last year.
You like to read a lot?
Sometimes. Well, I used to.
They shared a smile.
63rd Street. 63rd Street next.
You've missed your transfer point.
I know.
She spoke in a soft voice.
I know.
And began reading the second pad.
Cicely Tyson again. And here's the fourth act of Very Affectionately Yours, Fred.
63rd and Stony Island, folks. Fast we go. Watch your step as you get off the train. Have a nice day.
Fred felt guilty about making her miss her transfer connection and overwhelmed because she was rereading his notes to her.
Well, what about you, old buddy? You this much in love with the L you don't want to get off?
They looked at each other for a hard moment and stood together. Norton folded his arms across his chest as he watched them stroll out onto the platform.
Well, well. Looks like cold-blooded Freddy has met his match.
Well?
Well, what?
I don't know. I mean, what would you like to do?
I would like to go home now that I've missed my appointment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
Oh, not your fault.
When I ask you what...
I know what you meant.
Fred pursed his lips, perplexed. On one hand, it seemed only right that she would be reserved. After all, what kind of response should a person be expected to make after reading a couple of love-struck memo pads? Fred's spirits dropped.
Do you have to go home right now?
No. No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
But you just said...
Doesn't a woman still have the right to change her mind? Why don't we go somewhere and have something to eat? I'm starving.
Something to eat?
Yes, don't you eat?
Fred stared at the dimples of her smile and the glint of rampant humor in her eyes. A perky sense of humor and beauty of spirit. Unbeatable combination. It wasn't until they had settled into seats at a really good table, 23 floors above the city in a Thai restaurant called Linda's, that the full impact hit him.
I don't believe this. We're actually out on a date.
At times, she seemed to look slightly beyond him, behind him, her hands gripping his memo pads on the table in front of her.
You know, I really feel compelled to say this. You're one of the most romantic men I've ever met.
Fred sucked his stomach in and shrugged. It was totally unreal.
Here I am, sitting across from this lady that I've been fantasizing about, and she tells me that I'm romantic. Well, it's true. I guess I am.
Feeling pretty much assured that he knew what was and what wasn't romantic, he felt a slice of his nervousness slip away. She was a for real person. Extraordinary, but for real.
You're talking about the memo pads.
Yes, these, the pads. Who else but a romantic would have thought of doing something like this?
The cords in Fred's neck tightened. Intelligent woman, sees life from different perspectives.
I don't know. I just did what I felt I had to do.
The waiter, Suavely appearing at his elbow saved him from trying to explain why she had been the catalyst. They settled back to stare at each other after he competently but nervously ordered mint chicken Thai style and curried shrimp in coconut milk. Linda, the proprietress, sensing an event, glided over to their table with two glasses of white wine, compliments of the house.
What made you do it?
Keep a record of my feelings? A record of you?
Yes, well, that's a good place to start.
Well, I knew that I wanted to get to know you, but I couldn't figure out a way. I was leading myself up to a plan when they changed my shift. After the shift change, I decided to do something radical.
Look, I have to admit, I'm really flattered. Really, I am. To an extent. But then, well, this just might be a little game you're playing. Let's face it. Guys working on the L meet lots of people. You know what I mean?
He panicked for a second. Of course, that would be a natural assumption for her to make. Like, after all, wasn't that the only thing a lot of people did? Play emotional games?
Look, I know what you mean. But this isn't a game. There are things that I've written in those pads that I'll never be able to write again. I just won't be able to feel this way again.
You ever been in love before?
Yeah, lots of times.
Fred, you know something?
No, what?
I'm beginning to feel a little lost with you. In these two pads, you've written some things I didn't know that men still felt. Very affectionately yours, Fred. Something really unique. But now you're saying that you've been in love lots of times. I mean, how am I supposed to feel that this is something special?
But it's true. I've always been the kind of guy who fell in love. I'd be lying if I said something different. I was in love with the prettiest girl in my fourth grade class and the old maid schoolteacher. I was even in love with a funny colored dog named Spunk.
I get the point. You've been in love before.
Yes, but it was never like this. The first time I saw you, I thought my heart was going to stop. Honest.
She clamped her hand across her mouth to hold back her urge to laugh. What a corny line.
Yeah, I know. Sounds corny, but it's the truth. I felt drawn to you like you were someone I had known a long time ago and you were back again.
Why do you make such a big thing of my face? Is that super important to you, that I should be pretty?
I'm glad you are. But the impact might have been just as great if you looked the opposite of how you look. Hard to figure out how you come to feel about some people. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but it doesn't impress me. Guys are always coming on to me with that, "It doesn't matter how you look," line. If I looked like I needed plastic surgery, you wouldn't have been attracted to me. Would you? Tell me the truth.
Fred swallowed a sip of his wine, stared out at a distant building, searching for the right thing to say. He knew they were at their first crucial point, a disagreement. He felt it was important to be honest.
No. I might have been attracted to something else about you, though. How's your chicken?
My chicken is delicious. Are you always so honest?
I try to be.
I really don't know what to say to you. I'm here, we're having lunch together because I'm curious. Your memo pads are really fascinating. The descriptions of what I've been wearing and stuff like that. But I don't love you.
Fred slumped in his seat. White wine, curried shrimp, and cityscape temporarily forgotten. I don't love you. Something to think about.
Althea, I know you don't love me now, but you'll learn to love me. You'll see.
Fred, I'm going to have to help you polish your lines.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Why don't we put it on hold? Don't you just love the lakefront?
Yes, especially with you. You know, at one point, right after I first met you, right after I first saw you, I had a dream about us doing this. I dreamt that you and I would be strolling along the lakefront just like this, and you'd ask me, "Don't you just love the lakefront?"
And I'm talking about you using cliches.
I don't know. Maybe growing up on a small farm in Alabama and being around people who were totally for real with themselves and each other may have been responsible for me being so
What is it you call me?
Romantic.
Yes. Maybe that had something to do with it.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm glad.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Why?
I told you earlier.
I mean, what happened to change your mind about me?
Well, I told you earlier that I thought you were one of the most romantic guys I've ever met.
I know, but you didn't say it with the same kind of conviction.
That's true. I guess I've just been taken in by your winning ways.
Oh, come on, Althea, be serious.
Okay, I'll be serious. But think about the number of times a woman, almost any woman, is approached by men on the L. I mean, we know automatically, in most cases, that you have to meet the assault head on.
Assault?
I call it assault because it's unwelcomed attention. It's an invasion of your privacy.
Oh.
Oh, understand me now, Fred. I'm not talking about the crazies. I mean, those you just simply dismiss. I'm talking about the seemingly intelligent, sometimes good-looking types who charm their way into your confidence.
Fred flashed back to a notorious type who had ridden his train for a few weeks. It stung him to remember the number of times he had watched the emotional fraud scribble phone numbers on matchbooks.
I know the type you mean.
All I'm really saying is, it pays to keep your emotional guard up.
That's how my dog got his name.
Oh, that's funny.
I have a bunch of stories that I've been saving to tell you.
Sounds like it'll take some time to get through your repertoire.
They stood at the side of the entrance to the L, each obviously reluctant to make a move to break up the mood.
Well, looks like it's getting to be just about that time for me. Another half hour and I'll be singing out the old numbers to the commuters. 47th Street, 47th Street, the great street. Watch your step as you exit the train, please.
Well, at least you do try to make things rhyme.
Try?
I mean, you do make some kind of rhyme happen.
A subconscious urge caused them to reach their right hands out to each other, touch briefly, and return their hands to their sides.
Guess I'll be saying goodbye for now. Will I see you again before next Tuesday?
Why don't you give me a ring? I'm in the book. Althea Cole. C-O-L-E.
I will, Althea, C-O-L-E. You can count on it. You know, I've been dying to ask you why I've only seen you riding the L on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Althea studied Fred's eager, warm expression for a moment.
I'm a sickle cell trade carrier.
Fred blinked involuntarily. The gaiety of the moment suddenly dimmed.
You're what?
I have the trait for sickle cell anemia. I'm saying this by way of explaining why you've only seen me Tuesday and Thursday.
Look,
I took a test that showed I had the trait. Got involved and started doing volunteer work at the Sickle Cell Health Center on Tuesday and Thursdays since July. And I've missed today. Why are you staring at me like that?
Well, I didn't mean to stare. It's just that, shouldn't you be in the hospital receiving treatment or something? I mean, sickle cell anemia is pretty serious.
Well, sickle cell anemia is serious, but I don't have that. I have sickle cell trait. And so do you, probably. About 1 out of every 10 blacks carry the trait. Maybe more.
Fred stroked his chin thoughtfully. Was this lady full of surprises, or wasn't she full of surprises?
You look puzzled. Look, let me explain as simply as I can. Sickle cell anemia is the result of an abnormality in the formation of hemoglobin.
Hemoglobin transports oxygen. Biology 101.
Oh, you get an A for remembering. Anyway, the red cells in the hemoglobin, which are normally donut-shaped, change their shapes when they're exposed to low amounts of oxygen and become sickle-shaped. These irregular shapes clog up small blood vessels and deprive vital organs of their full blood supply. Mrs. Brown over at the center would be proud of me. She's been trying to get me to remember that explanation for a month.
Well, what happens when...
The anemic person has what they term crises. That usually lasts several days. They're nauseated, they vomit, their joints ache. Sometimes they die. The trait just means that you're a carrier, and that's that.
How would this affect children?
Well, it's all in the genes. If we had children, for example, and I have the trait and you don't, there's a 50% chance that the children would have the trait, but not the anemia. The possibility of the anemia would be 100% if both of us had the sickle cell anemia and had children. Aren't you going to be late for work? What shall I do with these pads?
Save them! They'll make interesting readings! for our kids!
Althea's gaze lingered on Fred's disappearing frame as he took the steps to his locker room, two at a time.
Unreal! Wait until I write my mother and tell her that I've met the man of my dreams. I'm sure she'll be amazed that anything good could come out of the big city.
During the normal course of events, Fred Vernon and Althea Cole became husband and wife. We join them now, a year later. Fred is looking for a pair of clean over-the-calf socks.
Althea, have you seen my long socks?
Nope, and I haven't been looking for them either.
What's this? Looks like a diary.
Today, finally he noticed me. I volunteered to come into the health center an hour earlier on Tuesday and Thursday, just to make certain I'd see him. There's such a devil-may-care air about him, especially when he wears that dashing black silk scarf.
Oh, no! You found it! I'm so embarrassed! Give it to me. You shouldn't be reading my diary.
Oh, no. You've read two books of my heartfelt emotions. I ought to be able to read one of yours.
Okay, but not now. Please, Freddy.
Whatever you say, honey. We don't want you getting all upset, especially right now. Might be bad for the baby. But you've got to answer one question.
One question, no more. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I knew I should have burned that.
The question is, when did you start your journal?
Honestly?
Honestly.
About 2 weeks before you started yours.
2 weeks before? You mean you let me go through all the changes I went through with you, and you were feeling the same way I felt?
Well, not exactly the way you felt.
But you still felt something. And why did you keep me on the hook for so long?
Well, you know the old saying, honey. The riper the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Which reminds me, I have to call Mom this evening. She must be on the scene when the baby arrives. Incidentally, have you thought of a name?
If it's a boy or a girl, how about Vay?
V-A-Y?
Yes. Very affectionately yours.
Ah.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you five nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, Very Affectionately Yours, Fred, was written by Odie Hawkins and produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your hostess was Cicely Tyson. Our stars were Kim Hamilton, Robert Doki, and Robin Braxton. Featured in the cast were Cedric Scott and Jack Carroll. The Mutual Radio Theater theme was composed by Nelson Riddle. John Harlan speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CVI. Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you by Buick, who invites you to experience the surprising response and smoothness of their V6 lineup during the Buick V6 Surprise Drive at your Buick dealers now.
This is Leonard Nimoy. Listen to us tomorrow. I've got another story of adventure about men and women defying the odds. Listen here tomorrow.